Welcome to Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith. Join Jaguars General Manager Gene Smith and your host Cole Pepper as they break down the last Jaguars game and look at the next time the Jaguars take the field. We'll also take a dip inside the Gene Pool to see what makes a player stand out at his position. Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith. He is brought to you by Baptist Health, Ticket Exchange, Wells Fargo, Sonny's Barbecue, your local Jacksonville Teal Deals merchants, and by Everbank. Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith begins right now.
And we welcome you into Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith. Cole Pepper here, Jaguars Central, along with the general manager. And happy Labor Day to you. You've been laboring, as usual, on a Labor Day. Labor Day in the National Football League is not much of a holiday, is it?
No, it's not, but it's a labor of love.
Yeah, and now with the season, I mean, it's here. I mean, here we don't have a regular season game to talk about, but everything else is going on. Had a chance to talk with a number of the players in the locker room today. You've got the roster set, and everybody's in first place right now, and it's all around the league. People are saying, all right, well, you know, let's see. We've seen preseason, but what's going to happen now? Give me your thoughts here as we're on the doorstep of the start of the season, on sort of the your state of the union, where we are, and how excited you are to see how things come together.
Well, it's great that we're in game week and in preparation of the Tennessee Titans. You can tell it out on the practice field. You can feel it with the spirit in the players and their competitiveness and the way they're tuning in. And so it's a great feeling this time of the year to be in that position, especially over the last month for me and the player personnel staff and a lot of the things that have taken place in terms of roster movement. And so to be starting the real games in what I call the reality season, it's really going to be a special weekend.
I think this reality TV might be better than the Kardashians or some Real Housewives of Des Moines or whatever's up next. I mean, this is unscripted and this is real, and so here we go. Of course, as always, you can jump aboard here with your questions or comments via Twitter or via Facebook. You can just tweet them to me at Cole Pepper, and I already have a bunch of them coming in. Folks, I think, are excited for the season and enjoying things here on a Labor Day Monday. We're not going to spend a lot of time looking back at the preseason, but do want to at least give it a little bit of a mention and give me what were the most significant things that you thought came out of the preseason? You know, what was accomplished here in what was a very different preseason than we're used to?
Well, I think some of the things are certainly the defensive side of the ball, in the Atlanta game in particular, when we had a number of players out there against a quality offense. And I think we saw some growth, certainly in our secondary. I know we gave up a couple plays with eye violations, but I can tell you this, if we can create more rush up front, the coverage will be better. I feel like as a defensive unit, we will really make some strides this year.
That was a major focus for you in the out-of-season planning and the draft and free agency. You knew, not just from looking at the stats, but looking up, on the field, looking at the film, defense had to get better.
It certainly did, and to win championships, you got to be good on defense. And we're still growing as a football team on offense, on defense, and in the kicking game. But I would say now our defense is going to, I think, shape into something that a lot of people following this team will be very proud of this year.
And we'll certainly talk about some of those moves and the way that the roster shakes out now, with the final 53 set in the practice squad. But one addition, one added player here right at the end was Dwight Lowry, a defensive back. He's played both corner and safety. You traded with the Jets to get him. Tell us about the newest Jaguar.
Well, Dwight is a guy I did a lot of work on coming out of college. In junior college, he was a free safety. He ended up moving to corner at San Jose State. In the last 2 years in college, he had 13 interceptions, 14 PBUs. He comes to us from the Jets with 32 PBUs and 7 interceptions. Now, he's played everywhere in the secondary. He's more of a free safety type. He's got good ball hawk skills, but he also has played corner in their sub packages. So he gives us very good veteran versatility on the back end.
and obviously a guy who has made a lot of play. You talked about some of the numbers there. He wasn't the full-time at any one position there. Very good defense, obviously, with the Jets, but sounds like a guy who is, has a knack for finding the ball.
He certainly does. Like I say on players who get around the ball a lot, the ball tends to find them. Mm. You know, Ed Reed, Rasheen Mathis, certainly in college, and, you know, even in the NFL, he has a knack of being around the ball a lot, and that's what Dwight brings.
All right, we'll see. The competition that happens there, you couldn't possibly be caught up. The Jets run a very different kind of defense than the Jaguars do. What's the learning curve for a veteran like that coming in and trying to learn a new defense?
Well, I think he's the type of guy because he's football intelligent. He certainly has been in a, I think, comprehensive defensive scheme. He's had to do a lot of different things. And so for being in an NFL system for 3 years, I think it'll be I'm not going to say a seamless transition, but it'll be an easier transition certainly than a rookie or a younger player.
And some of the roster moves you had to make were sort of they were made for you in some ways, and talk about injuries and so forth, and you put some guys on injury reserve. I know that, well, you'd love to have some of these guys in there and playing, and in particular the two guys I want to mention, Rashad Jennings and Anthony Smith, a couple of guys that we're going to be counted on to be backups, but you lose them for the year.
No question. Key role players for us, outstanding people, tough call. And the one thing is they're both young players that we have to get them right, and they have bright futures. And that's part of life in the NFL, and we need somebody else to step up. And as tough as it is to not have Rashad Jennings and DeAnthony Smith, I know they'll have a complete recovery and come back even stronger next year.
Should the league institute something like baseball has done for years, where you have different lengths of injured reserve lists? You know, right now it's either on IR and done for the year. Should there be an 8-week or a 6-week injured reserve spot, maybe a limited number that you can utilize for guys who you know are going to be out for a while? But with the way that modern medicine is now, some of these, you know, injuries that 10 years ago would have been season enders, now you can get a guy back mid-season.
Cole, I completely agree. I thought possibly in this new CBA something would be in there that would be different in regarding IR. I know the plan was if they went to an 18-game schedule that there would have been new rules for IR to be able to have a player come back, let's say, after 8 games. But under the current 16-game schedule, there was nothing new, in essence, with the IR rules.
What's the argument against that? Are they afraid of teams hiding players or, you know, sticking a guy to the side and then coming back? It doesn't seem that there's much of a downside to it.
There really isn't. I think it goes back to what you said years ago when the rule was put in place. Maybe they didn't have the medical advancements that they have today. Like today, an ACL, even an Achilles tendon injury, guys can come back in, you know, relatively good time. Certainly if it happens at the very start of your season, then they're out really for the rest of the season. But if it happened, let's say, in your OTAs or it happened very late in the year where a guy could have a chance to come back the following year earlier.
Even something like an MCL happening during the season where a guy's usually out 4 to 6 weeks, you have to – maybe the other side of the argument is, well, you've got the game day inactives, and you kind of use that in that same way. But, boy, you'd think that the NFL Players Association would jump all over it. Love that, because it's giving an opportunity to get guys, you know, more guys roster time and time in. And I know coaches would love it. I don't see anybody who is clamoring against something like that. But, boy, just it would seem to make a whole lot of sense.
Well, to me it would, and like I said, even the severe injuries you can come back from a lot quicker than in the past. But even some of the ones that are the 6 to 8, 8 to 10, you know, you're caught in a situation where you got to do what's in the best interest of the team, and sometimes it's a very difficult decision for a player and certainly someone that has to make the decision to put them on IR.
All right, well, the Jaguars will open up the season on Sunday without Rashad Jennings and DeAnthony Smith and a number of other players. We'll talk about those when we get you our injury update here after the break. Also coming up, we'll have the Scout's Eye Unsung Player, final one for the preseason. And this is the guy who didn't necessarily make the highlight play or the obvious game-winning play, but that did things right and caught the scout's eye. And during the regular season, starting a week from today, you'll have a chance to win an autographed football from both the general manager and the unsung player. If you can tweet in or Facebook in the right answer and all the correct answers, we'll draw out of a hat to have that winner. And we will have, you want to test your skill right now, you can do that, tweet it in or go via Facebook and go ahead and enter that. Who are the unsung player from the scout's eye for the preseason finale? Seems like a long time ago now, Thursday, as we get ready for the regular season. Also coming up, we'll talk a little bit about undrafted rookies who made the squad yet again. And a nice little story about one of them I'll share with you and the general manager, although he knows the story, he's part of it. We'll get to that here as we continue on. Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith as we get ready for the regular season here on Jaguars Radio. Welcome back. Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith here on the 5th of September. Labor Day Monday here in Jacksonville and across the country. Fans, nobody helps you get ready for game day better than Gate. Snacks, food, drinks, and more. Stop by Gate today. Time now for an injury update brought to you by Baptist Health, Jacksonville Circle of Care. Our injury update music. The doctor. Doctor who? It's a doctor. Very nicely done, Joe Fortunato. We mentioned DeAnthony Smith and Rashad Jennings placed on injury reserve as well as cornerback David Jones, defensive end Aaron Morgan, and running back Richard Murphy. And those guys, again, done for the year. All of them, you know, we've seen flashes from Aaron Morgan, certainly, and Richard Murphy, I thought, did some good things in the preseason as well and showed some running ability.
He really did. It's unfortunate for all those guys. But, you know, Cole, you brought up a very good point with the medical advances. Why can't some of these guys come back if it's a 6 to 8, 8 to 10 week injury, especially for the playoff run? It'd be great if there was a revision in the IR rules. And just so people understand, if you come into training camp, you don't pass the physical, we can put them on PUP, and then we can make a determination, mm-hmm. you know, at the final cut, whether we put them down for, you know, 6 weeks on PUP, and then we have an extended period beyond that mm-hmm. before we actually activate them, get them on the practice field to practice. So
that's only for a pre-existing injury or something that did not happen. You know, the non-football injury and PUP, physically unable to perform, which there are a couple of us in this room who might qualify for that as a whole separate conversation.
Well, I've had a number of people ask the question, why couldn't you put them on PUP, and that's why.
Yeah.
So,
all right, we've got some questions coming in here on the Twitter feed, and we'll get to some of those as well. Do want to talk about the quarterback situation. I mean, can't go a week without talking about that. Luke McCown looked very good in some extended action, and there was a big hubbub about, oh, well, is McCown now the backup? For what it is worth, and take depth charts with a grain of salt, particularly when you talk about the quarterback, but the official Jaguars depth chart out now, David Garrard 1, Blaine Gabbert 2, McCown 3. Any more with the new rule, to me, it's I think I've used the comparison of a bullpen in baseball. You call them the 2 or the 3, it doesn't matter. The backups, and you have your starter, and you have your backups, and that's sort of the way it is.
That is the way it is, and I trust the coaching staff's judgment who works with these quarterbacks every day in terms of how they're going to play our quarterbacks, you know, the starter, the backup, and how they're going to appropriate practice time to get them ready for each game.
There were some undrafted players who made it. Cameron Bradfield, the offensive tackle, wide receiver Jamar Newsom, and cornerback Kevin Rutland. Rutland, I think, is a guy you've had your eye on for quite a while, and then he made some notable plays on special teams and we've been talking about the wide receiver position quite a bit. I'll tell a quick story about Jamar Newsom. Sometimes there are guys, you see stories from other teams and so forth, where a guy didn't know, he's sitting there waiting for the phone to ring, and if it doesn't ring by 4, he figures he probably made it, but maybe isn't sure until the last minute. You called Jamar Newsom, and I'm guessing the other undrafted rookies, and he was on the sideline at a UCF game, his alma mater, and the phone rang. It was during preseason warm-ups, and everybody suddenly froze right around him. And we're looking at him, and he gave him a thumbs up. Everybody went crazy, and you kind of welcomed him to the team.
Yeah, it was a great phone conversation, and I call all the rookies that make our team. And, you know, it's really a tremendous thing for them. They're fulfilling their dream that they've tried to play out their entire life, you know, on every playground, every backyard, and now it's, you know, again become reality. This is the regular season, and they're a part of an active 53.
You know, it's interesting, too. We had him on one of our undrafted segments we do in the preseason, talk with some of these undrafted rookies to hear their stories. And in between the time that the draft happened and because it was an extended amount of time before you could sign undrafted rookies this year with the labor negotiations, he was working at a Macy's, working inventory, waking up early and going in and doing inventory checks, and then he would do his workouts, try to stay in shape and so forth. And I made the comment to him, you know, Kurt Warner used to stock shelves at a grocery store. So, and his eyes kind of lit up, said, yeah, you know, you can go from being a stock boy to make it in the NFL. And I saw him in the locker room today, and he had a big smile on his face. So, as you mentioned, it's two sides of the coin. One side, to get these kids who weren't drafted and who obviously had the letdown there, but then worked hard and showed their talent and realized their dream of making an NFL roster. On the other hand, it's the guys you have to cut who have gone through many of the same things, and then they fall short. And I know that's got to be about the worst part of your job, is when you have to deliver that message.
Yeah, it's not an enjoyable weekend at all. That's probably the highlight, getting an opportunity to call the rookies that make the team, because it is a special moment. But for everything else you have to do that weekend, it's not anything you want to do on a regular basis, for sure. And I try to treat them how I'd like to be treated if I was in that particular situation. And, you know, a lot of these guys, it's the first time they're being told that they're not making the team. A lot of these guys have families. They have tremendous passion for their sport. And so whenever I can, I certainly try to help their cause with other teams. But, you know, again, I can't compare it to anything that I do, at least professionally, you know, that's any less enjoyable.
Yeah, it's tough enough to fire somebody once when you have to do it a bunch of guys all right in a row. Practice squad, by the way, Daniel Baldridge, the offensive tackle. DeJuan Harris, the running back, we saw some good things from in the preseason. T.J. Heath, the cornerback. Jacob Cutrera, the linebacker. Mike Lockley, a linebacker. Matt Estrada, a safety. And then a guy who was not – all those guys were with the team. And then Tyler, is it Beeler? It's a new name on the roster.
Yeah, Tyler Beiler.
Beiler, okay. And what's his backstory?
He was with San Francisco in training camp. And he's a track football athlete, a lot like Cecil Shorts, at a Division III school in Virginia called Bridgewater College. Okay. So he's got legitimate height, weight, speed, and he's got tremendous career production. So he's a guy we do have on the practice squad as one of our wide receivers.
You decided on just five linebackers in the final roster. What went into that?
Well, I think the key is, like I've said before, you got to have enough players relative to a position so that you can play games in the NFL. But in saying that, you also have to ensure you're keeping the best 53 players. So that's where, for me, I put great emphasis on the top 53.
All right. So that's, when it comes right down to it, it's not just keeping X number of linebackers. It's keeping the best guys you got. And if that means you're a little shorter than usual on the linebacker, a little heavier in the defensive back, what have you, that's what goes into that decision.
That's correct.
All right. Let's get some questions here from the Twitter feed. And we'll also get some as well in from Facebook. A number of folks looking forward and some looking at the roster have some questions they want to get into. One simply said Newsom, wanting to know about Newsom and what kind of an expectation there is now for a young wide receiver like that.
Well, the big thing he has to do is contribute on special teams. I mean, he's a backup wide receiver. He's, for a rookie, he's got an NFL receiver body. I mean, he's strong. He's got good size. He can run. He's shown toughness as a guy on teams, not just covering kicks, but holding guys up as a blocker. And even as a receiver blocking, he does a good job. Here's a guy that, you know, was up and down at times during training camp, started to level off, and then you saw when we got into the preseason games, the cream kind of rise to the top. In the last preseason game, he had four catches for a 20.8 average. He had two kickoff returns for a 27.5 average. So I think he's earned this opportunity to be a Jaguar.
You mentioned his performance in kick returns. With Jennings being put on the IR, Deji Kareem is going to get a heavier workload, you would think. he's been returning kicks, and so you want to make sure you have another option there in terms of the kick returns, don't you?
Yes, and there's a number of people that could do kick returns. When you get down to punt returns, that's a little different skill set. So we feel very confident. You know, he did it in college, and he certainly shows if he can secure that ball well in traffic that he can do it at this level.
All right, another one from Kevin. Do you view Rod Isaac as a cornerback or a safety or as a secondary utility guy going forward?
Well, I think utility guy is a good word. He's very smart. So he's able to play really all the positions in the secondary, but it's really more free safety, corner, and then special teams. I mean, he can run. Like I said, he's intelligent, and he's aggressive. So he will have a role if he gets an opportunity to be up in our game day 46, you know, on special teams.
All right. We'll take more questions on the Twitter feed. Just tweet them to me, Cole Pepper, C-O-L-E-P-E-P-P-E-R, and we'll get more questions in for the general manager. We'll also talk a little bit about the upcoming opponent, the Tennessee Titans, in the opener. But first, time now for the Scout's Eye Unsung Player of the Week from high above. Who is your unsung player for this week?
Jason Spitz, offensive guard center. People in this city are very familiar with Jason, a Bulls graduate. And he did a good job of finishing blocks. I mean, he actually today out there was pretty active in practice and what we did. But he just a very intelligent player, very functional with his hands, knows how to use angles. I really like the way he competed in the game.
And a guy who has a very good football pedigree dating back to high school, talking about playing at Bowls and all the way up. So Jason Spitz is the Scout's Eye Unsung Player. And starting next week, you'll be able to win an autographed football from the general manager and from the player who was deemed as the unsung player of the week from the Scout's Eye. All right, we'll take timeout, come back with a Gene Pool. We'll look at running backs. What does it take to be a top running back in the National Football League? We'll also size up the division a little bit, some interesting things going on around the division, and take a look at the Titans, the team the Jaguars open with on the 10th anniversary of September 11th. It's going to be an emotional day for the opener here at Everbank Field. Fans, just text BBQ to 72239 and enter for a chance to win the Sony, the Sonny's Game Ball Delivery Contest. And you could hand the game ball to the ref at the start of the next Jaguars home game. Back with more Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith right after this timeout here on Jaguars Radio. Welcome back, Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith here on a Monday night. I have more questions for the GM here in just a bit. Become a part of the Jaguars Advantage, the new Jaguars fan loyalty program with Jaguars Advantage. Season ticket owners can earn up to 15% cash back at hundreds of their favorite online retailers. For more information, go to jaguarsadvantage.com. All right, time now to jump in the gene pool as we examine what it takes, the very DNA for different positions. And let's go to running backs. Good week to talk about running backs with two of the best going to be on the field on Sunday. From my exhaustive research, Gene, 5'10", 215, 4'5'8 in the 40, the numbers for that I found. You love hearing the numbers I come up with, don't you? You got a grin on your face every week.
Well, we break down the running back group, obviously, into halfback and fullback.
Yep.
So that's how we declare it. And for a halfback coming out this year, from the scouting combine, it was 5'11", 4", which is 5'11 and a half, 213 pounds, running 4.57. A pro starter this past year was 5'11", 2", 217, and 4.51.
So you hear, boy, the average at 4.51. 4.51 doesn't blow anybody away when you hear about that 40 speed. Maybe 40 speed, and I think Emmett Smith would probably say 40 speed might be a little bit overrated for a running back.
And I would agree with that, Cole. It is somewhat overrated. A lot of fast running backs are more straight line and narrow based, and as a result, they go down easy.
So those are some of the measures. What's the ideal size for running back? I mean, we've seen guys at almost every size imaginable have success from, you know, Lionel James at a certain level, Barry Sanders and Emmett Smith were short guys, Maurice Jones-Drew's a short guy, to bigger guys like Eric Dickerson, Christian Okoye was 260 pounds. Is there such thing as an ideal size for a running back?
Well, I think the size that I look for is one that's productive. I think football players come in all different shapes and sizes. So I don't know if there's one particular size. I think there's a body type you want. Guys who are thick in their hip and thighs. I mean, you typically don't like to have running backs that have a lower body of a wide receiver. I mean, you want somebody that can handle the rigors of the position. A player that certainly has good stability in their lower legs to maintain balance, to give you the power runs that you need in short yardage situations. So, I mean, I think it's more a body type than the size of the player.
You said one word there that triggered anytime you hear somebody talk about a really outstanding running back, two words that almost always are mentioned with them are balance and vision. Those are, you can't just put a number on balance and vision, but those are two pretty key attributes.
No question. I think the mark of a good running back, to me, is someone who has balance after first contact. And then what yards do they get on their own? Can they create when the blocking breaks down? Because you're not always going to block it right. You got to give the defense some credit here now, too. And I think, again, if I had to put it on one thing, it would be balance over speed. It's the guy who can maintain his balance and gain additional yards, breaking tackles, staying on his feet. I think that's really a mark of a quality running back.
You know, somebody once said that if a running back always fell forward and gained an extra yard or yard and a half and he got 20 carries, that could make a difference between a kind of pedestrian-looking game and a 100-yard game. I mean, so you talk about a guy who's balancing can be moving forward. That's a difference maker between a journeyman and a Pro Bowl.
No question. Then you also said vision, and I agree with that. You want them to have good vision. Some scouts would call it pick and slide ability, and that's the ability to set and follow blocks in the hole. And, you know, the other thing I would say is durability. Mm-hmm. It's the one position that you're going to be heavily involved in contact. So I think we've said three things here that, you know, all the great ones have.
And speaking of the great ones, we wrap up the Gene Pool every week with the who is best category, and that is, what are you looking for, you know, when you say, who is either the best of all time, best you ever scouted, best you've seen, who falls into that conversation?
Well, I'm biased for Maurice. His career certainly is far from being over, so I'm going to pick another player in the league, Adrian Peterson of Minnesota, 601-4221-438. You know, he's been to the Pro Bowl four times. And I'll pick a gentleman who just retired that I think the world of, and Fred Taylor, 5'11", 7", 232, 439, and he went to the Pro Bowl, but he could have went on a couple other occasions for sure. And then a guy, myself growing up in Ohio, that I certainly looked up to, I saw a lot of highlights of him, Jim Brown. Played 9 years in the league, 9 Pro Bowls, and he was 6'2", 232, and he was a blend of, you know, a lot of what Fred Taylor had. He just a little bit taller. But, you know, he certainly had the ability to beat you with power and with speed. And so there's three running backs that I think when you look at some of the all-time greats in Fred and Jim, and then certainly Maurice and Adrian Peterson in the league right now are certainly guys making their mark.
Yeah, without a doubt. Let's talk a little more about Fred, who had his official – I would call it a press conference, but that would be selling it short a little bit. It was a retirement ceremony. Came back, signs a one-day contract with the team to retire as a Jaguar. And I've told the story many times about the 2007 season, and we did a pregame interview with Fred every week. He'd come in here, sit where you're sitting right now, Gene, here in Jaguar Central, and we'd talk about the game and the season and so forth. And sometimes we talked about some other things, and it was really great to be just kind of hitch on to that season. That was such a great season for him when he went over 10,000 yards, got his first Pro Bowl, and really cemented his legacy in Jacksonville that year. But you saw him from the beginning, and the growth that he had as an individual was maybe even more impressive than the growth he had as a football player.
No question. And when you use the word growth, as he grew as a player, I grew as a scout. I scouted him, you know, coming out of the University of Florida. I saw him mature as a player and as a person. Being at the press conference on Friday is very emotional. He was a man that spoke directly from his heart. He said a lot of things that I wish a lot more people could have heard. He is a special person. I mean, more than the great player that he was here in the NFL, he was an even better person. And a lot of people could learn from a lot of things he said on Friday. So I use the word humility. That's one thing that Fred always had, and that's what I'll always remember him by. That really defined Fred.
There was a moment after his time up on the dais there where he stepped down and some of the veteran players had gathered around and were talking to him, and Deji Kareem came up, and a guy who hadn't played with Fred but wanted to meet him and talk to him. And, I think about the legacy when you talk about a coaching tree and you have a head coach and these are his assistants and it goes down through the years. Well, in a lot of ways, Fred has that running back tree here in Jacksonville. Obviously, you know, Maurice was his understudy and sort of his wingman in the early days of Maurice's career. And then here's Deji Kareem, who's being influenced by Maurice, obviously, and that Fred was such an influence on Maurice that now he's also influencing Deji.
No question. And I rarely say rare in player personnel, but here's a guy that had rare height, weight, speed, and just that blend of those things and the athleticism that he displayed with the football in his hand. And to see like Deji Kareem and Maurice, you know, watching that highlight of all Fred's great runs, it was so awesome to experience him as a player and then to hear him talk as a person. And I know they walked away with a lot of knowledge from a great player and a great person.
Yep, really was great to see that. Quickly, Jaguars have named captains, two on offense, two on defense, two on special teams. Maurice is one of them, along with Mercedes Lewis. On defense, it's Aaron Campman and Daryl Smith. No surprises there. And then on special teams, no surprise, Montel Owens and Kasim Osgood. So you've got two in each of the different segments of the team who have been named, and those will be the captains for the team going forward. We'll take time out. When we come back, we'll talk about the matchup with the Titans coming up as well. More of your comments and questions for the GM if you want to jump on board via Twitter. Just tweet to me at Colepepper, Colepepper, and get your question in for the general manager. Back with more Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith right after this timeout here on Jaguars Radio. We welcome you back. Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith. Getting ready for the regular season to kick off on Sunday against the Titans. We will take a look at some key matchups to watch against the Titans and look around the division a bit, too. Just a couple of interesting things, particularly with the Colts as far as sizing up the division. Peyton Manning is being listed as doubtful, being called very doubtful. Doctors told him not to practice this week. That's probably a pretty good indication that he's not going to play for the Colts on Sunday as they open the season against the Texans. And so it'll be Kerry Collins at quarterback, we believe, at this point. Jim Tressel has also joined the Colts staff to help with replays, to monitor the monitor. And interesting that the Colts then applied a six-game suspension for Tressel coming out of the Ohio State situation. This is interesting to me, Gene, for a lot of different reasons. Number one, after Terrell Pryor got the suspension, boy, you had to do something. It would have been difficult to not do anything. And then you give him one extra game. But also interesting that you're talking about a guy who was a head coach in college, obviously at the highest level, now dealing with replay, and I wonder if there's a movement toward having guys who have been able to deal with a lot of things at the same time dealing with replay and how different teams are handling that around the league.
Well, I'm certain it's handled case by case, depending on the type of person they can get to put in that particular role. Most teams have a coach or coaches, one on offense, one on defense, that handle it. But from my end, I think it's a great concept, you know, to have somebody come in beside your coaching staff that has been in a situation where they have to see things and make a decision in a timely manner, and some people can handle doing things in a timely manner better than others. And so I do feel someone like that that's been around football his whole life that can multitask would be a viable candidate.
Yeah, and make those decisions in a hurry, understanding a bigger picture, too. I mean, it's not just do you throw the flag on this now or not. It's all right. You got to – interesting. He's going to have to bone up on some rules because there's some rule differences, too, between the college and the pros. And so we'll see how that plays out starting in week 7 for the Colts. All right, let's get some more comments in here from the Twitterverse.
Yeah, Twitterverse is always good.
Yes.
Getting social with CopyFax as we use social media here to answer your questions. Our CopyFax question of the night comes from your buddy Zoltan, Coley. Zoltan wants to know, Gene, how different are the Titans with Hasselbeck at quarterback?
Well, I think he knows how to run an offense. He has a move the chain mentality. I know in his early years he was very accurate. And I haven't had a chance to study him as much as our advanced scout, Lewis Clark, and our coaching staff. But I know that the quarterback position is a lot of what you can do from the neck up. And he's an A-plus there. And I really believe that he'll go out in the field and manage the game well. And you know, he's got tremendous experience. So I do think he gives them a great chance every time he steps out on the field.
What do you expect out of Chris Johnson? Is he going to, I mean, very little time in terms of time on the field in camp with a holdout with his new contract?
Well, I'm sure they'll manage his touches because he wasn't in camp the whole time, but he'll certainly be utilized. And then they have two other guys. They have Ringer and they have Harper, a Jacksonville native. So they do have a number of guys that they can use, and they have a head coach that was an offensive lineman himself. So I do think their right hand is going to be running the football.
You know, it's interesting, too, that for so long it's been Jeff Fisher's team, and now you've got a new coaching staff in place. I would think that offensively in particular you see a lot of the same kind of things as you've seen. That team's been built to be a run-first kind of team. They did draft Jake Locker in the first round, of course, one of the moves that allowed the Jaguars to take Blaine Gabbert. Defensively, are they going to be the same kind of team as they've been? You know, we're still going to see some 46 kind of things? Are we still going to see that you know, Jeff Fisher's fingerprint on the defense with the new coaching staff?
Well, they've lost some players on defense. They don't have the same coordinator. And you know, Jim Washburn, the defensive line coach, is now up in Philadelphia. But, you know, they always play as hard. It's a divisional game. I really think you know, when you look at the key matchup for this game is their offensive line and running backs against our defensive line and our linebackers. I think, you know, if you say what's the key matchup going into this one, I think most people would look at that, you know, matching strengths on our football team versus theirs.
This is, as it usually is with the Jaguars and Titans, a good old trenches game then. It's who wins the battle in the trenches.
No question. And I feel like, you know, like all the other games, it's going to be a very physical football game. And so, again, that's why I say it's a special weekend. We got a chance to come out of the gate and do some great things here on Sunday.
It's going to be a great atmosphere. I think it's going to be emotional for a lot of folks. Of course, it's the 10th anniversary of 9/11. League-wide, they're doing a number of things to recognize that anniversary. And I've been thinking back here today in particular as I was thinking back to that first game after 9/11 and what a surreal couple of weeks that was following the attacks. And it happened to be the Jaguars and Titans who played on that game. We'll rewind to that in our tailgate show, but that was an emotional day for everybody, I think, when after taking a week off and moving those games to the end of the year, a game against Chicago. What do you remember about that weekend in particular?
Well, for all of us, it was difficult. I was traveling. You know, I was scouting the nation. I was at Arizona State speaking to Ron English, one of their coaches, when I happened to see it on the TV in the video room.
Early in the morning out west then, huh?
Yes, it was unbelievable experience. And then I had to jump in a car and drive to Albuquerque. Obviously couldn't get on a flight, and long drive, but it was just one of those things that you'll never forget. I mean, everyone in this country will never forget that day, where they were, who they were with, what they were doing. So, again, I feel for those families. There were so many lives lost, and that makes this week an even special one.
Were you scouting a game that week following when they did get games going again? Were you out at a college site somewhere?
Yes, I was. You know, when you're a scout, the first thing you think about is everybody else, you know, that's flying around the country doing what we do. And I was just fortunate that from my perspective, you know, I didn't have any family member that had died, but you certainly have great heartfelt feelings towards the families that did. And for what we do at times, you think it's so critical trying to win football games. I never use the word critical. I use important. Mm-hmm. You know, critical is what happened on 9/11. Football can never be on par with that. So,
and we're going to have a chance to certainly remember that on Sunday. Gene, thanks a lot. We look forward to the season opener on Sunday, 1 o'clock for the kickoff. We'll have pregame coverage beginning at 10 o'clock with the Sunday's Real Pit Barbecue Tailgate Show. Should be a special day. That's Gene Smith. That's Joe Fortunato. Cole Pepper here saying thanks for listening to Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith. And good night from Jaguar Central.